Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom. In an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Kerr Hallenbeck. We've often heard the quote by Albert Einstein that we can't fix our old problems with our old thinking, and that we need new thinking in order to move forward. Well, today on the Godspeed Institute, we welcome Diane Collins, author of the groundbreaking new book, Do You Quantum Think? New thinking that will rock your world. The mission of Do You Quantum Think is to help all of us make a quantum leap from the archaic industrial age thinking of our recent past to a new era of quantum age thinking that is holistically attuned to modern developments in quantum physics, technology, and spirituality. Diane is a graduate of the University of Miami in philosophy and psychology and is a lifelong student of Siddha Yoga. Her varied experiences as a Fortune 100 corporate manager, a photographic artist, video producer, and consultant to business executives and entrepreneurs all contribute to her ability to provide a big picture view that makes it entertaining and even enjoyable to think effectively in sync with today's world. Diane, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Kerr. It is truly my honor to be with you.
Well, you know, it seems to me that Do You Quantum Think may be a cumulative result of a journey, your journey. Can you share some of that and help share with us what led you to write this book?
As I was growing up, as I'm sure all of us had similar experiences, especially those who are tuning into your program, Kerr, I wondered about the world and how people were with each other, and it seemed to me there was a discrepancy, a disconnect between all the wisdom that is available to us now at the touch of a smartphone, 6,000 or more years of wisdom. And yet, we still seemed not to be living it, seemed to elude us. And in my teenage years, I guess by grant of grace and destiny, I was able to see that it really was going to take an awakening of consciousness, an awakened mind beyond the conditioned habits that we seem to be accustomed to in our culture. You know, beyond the superficiality, let's say, of the mundane way that we lived. Nothing wrong with it. But there was somewhere where each one of us were not connecting. So to me, it really has been a journey of discovering how can we make that leap? How do we go from knowing the wisdom, from preaching it, teaching it, coaching in it, to actually embodying it as all the great saints and sages who we revere so much have done? And really, that is what my journey is all about.
Now, where did you happen to be raised in any particular spiritual or religious tradition?
I grew up in a what's considered conservative Jewish religion, was my family religion. Conservative meaning it was a moderate, you know, not Orthodox, not Reformed. And on my mother's side of the family, they were Orthodox. So I had witnessed the very Orthodox rituals of, you know, maintaining the Sabbath, not even turning on a stove or a light. And, you know, I had seen that type of ritual and appreciated it. And in my own family, I guess when I started to go to the synagogue, to go to services, I never really understood it, and I questioned God, I would say. I remember walking home, which was about a 4-mile walk, when I was about 11 years old, thinking, you know what, I'm leaving. I was kind of a maverick. You know, I said to my parents, I'm leaving. What do you mean you're leaving? You were in the temple. You know, I said, no, I just don't get this. I'm leaving. And I literally physically left. And it wasn't, you know, so I was questioning. And then I started to, I had have an older brother and sister. And so they were in, when I was in high school, they were in college, and they started bringing home philosophy books. And I think even before that, I started, you know, wondering about yoga. I would say also as a kind of a destiny that I would tend to attract spiritual knowledge would just come my way, come into my vicinity, into my resonant field. So I started really looking at, you know, what was yoga all about and Eastern philosophies. And then, you know, as I went along, I started studying the Western philosophers and realizing, well, that wasn't really it. It was reaching at something, but it wasn't really touching what I was after. But I continued, and I did have the realization that the one thing that I could contribute, or that I was contributing, all of us do, regardless of whatever else I would do in the external world as a profession, is that I was always emanating my state. Somehow I realized that at a very young age, and so I made a conscious decision at that point as a teenager that I would work on that, consciously develop myself and just aspire to be in the most evolved state that I could be in. And I think that's what led me to investigate so many different spiritual traditions and philosophies and ways to be.
Well, thank you so much, Diane. That's great. And I think, you know, it's interesting because questioning God is a great Jewish tradition. And, you know, the rabbis have tons and tons of questions and notes in the margins of the books. So in your way, that I find that great connection as well. But your journey has taken you to many places and many awarenesses. And I think, you know, we've had so many conversations around this that even those, you know, brought up in a tradition, there's an it that you're referring to, the it that couldn't be found, that sent them off on something, on a journey and a path to find their own way. So all these years later now, and you're right, whether no matter what we are, we're emanating our own state, and that's an important point. So now please elaborate. You go on and you have your professional career and then this book you manage to pull together. Now tell us more. What is the book about? Do you quantum think?
The book is really, I like to say what the purpose of it is, and I'll say what it's about. The purpose of it is to connect to our own awareness as we read. I say we because I still read it with my husband, Alan, who's my partner in business life and all things. And we continue to use it. So but what it is about is this. Two parts to the book. Part one is called Wake Up. Why should we quantum think? And I've been talking a little bit about that, you know, just getting down to the basics of life. What do we really want? All the perennial questions, you know, who am I? Why am I here? Why is there existence other than not? What are we supposed to do once we're here? And how are we in modern culture? You know, how is it going? Why do we aspire? Why do we love the masters? Why do we want to be all the ways, the virtues of this, what we would call saint-like way of being. And so, and then I go into in this my discovery, my revelation of why we haven't. And I want to say something about that, but just say the rest of the book. So part two is putting it all together. We know something of our leading edge knowledge today, the discoveries of science, are merging with what the universal wisdom is basically for all traditions, all wisdom traditions, all spiritual traditions. And then putting that into 21 principles I call distinctions in new thinking as a system of thinking with practices for the mind and awareness so that we can in one place have this body of knowledge where we can understand, well, what does it mean to live in a universe of whole systems where everything is interconnected and interrelated? How do we use the faculties of mind and consciousness that we haven't been taught in traditional education, which I'll give the reason in a moment? You know, what does it mean to transformation? What is that all about? And how is that distinct from change? So all of these 21 principles puts it all together. How do we use the energetic, the subtle energy, how is that part of our faculty of mind and how we can transmute and learn to become aware of and use energy? And how does that all fit in to being a spiritual being? So really, that's what the book is about. And as I'm sure you realized in reading at least some of it, that I wrote it in a direct, personal, first-person way and a lighthearted way so that we can lighten up about it. Because to me, Care, the most important discovery that I have made is that if you are literally living the wisdom, and I like the word, the way that you are focused on tolerance, that you have a deep compassion not just for everyone else, but also for yourself. So I could say that my revelation is this, you know, part of what I was growing up, we learn, you know, our habits of thinking. You brought up the Einstein quote at the beginning. We have to have a leap in the way that we think in order to solve the problems that the original thinking created.
Right.
So my discovery was that we imagine we think freely. We all like to consider ourselves independent thinkers, that we're choosing our thoughts. But what I discovered is that our thinking is also a system, and that the system of thinking is shaped by the prevailing worldview, the beliefs, ideas, conclusions that we have about the nature of reality and how it works. So what is the quantum leap to this, you know, from the archaic view to the new worldview? Is that the industrial age science, which many people call the Newtonian view or the mechanistic view,
right?
It was the beginning of the genius of science, rational science in the 17th century. Its focus was on the material aspect of life, of matter. In fact, they declared only matter is real. So when you look at that, and how did that shape our thinking? It made us very conceptual, analytical, wanting to go in a step-by-step direction. And even though I know those scientists were also spiritual, it was on the side, right? It was like, okay, leave that to the clergy or the church, or, you know, we'll investigate what is physical matter, what is it comprised of, how do we use it, how is it cause and effect, the world is clockwork machinery, the universe is a clock. And
right,
so
a great rift happened at that time. And when you get into some personal stories, it's sort of interesting to note that someone like Charles Darwin, who had been a spiritual man of faith, you know, member of the Church of England and what, lost a child, and in his grief turned away and began looking more towards that scientific route, and when, of course, became known for his theory of evolution. So that is one. This is one of the issues that we explore, that separation of the matter and, in fact, the spirit that perhaps animates it.
Exactly, because, you know, you could say, and I don't, of course, didn't know in person Charles Darwin, but just in his story that he wasn't living the wisdom of a holistic picture of the universe. Not really. But the way that I look at it, okay, so we're in a quantum age where we have the knowledge of it's that we are in a live, right? Live, alive with consciousness, a living, breathing, complexity of whole entities, organisms, from the macro to the microscopic. And that we are part and parcel of that. But as you bring up, Kara, about the separation, well, the old world view has shaped our thinking without even realizing it. And this is where I say, have compassion for ourselves as a humanity.
Yeah.
Because we have been conditioned, as Charles Darwin was at that point of evolution of, right, our own as a collective,
right.
You could say our evolution needed at that point to be able to organize nature, let's say, right, to try to make some order out of the chaos. And so they developed the scientific disciplines and all of the social systems, but they were in the context of this predict and control universe. And to predict and control, you would have to say something is either this way or that. And everything looked separate. When you're only dealing in the physical realm, we look separate. Objects look separate from us. It looks like there's an external reality out there to be described and manipulated.
Right, and we're largely then observers, not necessarily part of that web of unified creation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so we never learned, even our educational system, our judicial systems, our, you know, the whole divisiveness that's going on now, we have not awakened as a collective yet. I'm saying we are awakening now, but to that fact of our interconnection in all dimensions and how they relate together, the physical, the subtle energetic, the spiritual, the cosmic laws that operate throughout the universe and within you and me, therefore, the esoteric of prophecy and of evolution, and all of these things, and of course the divine, which is the ultimate mystery, right, responsible for all of it. So when we're in school, we're in the context of that separation consciousness. And so when I hear people today talk about, I call it ego bashing, you know, to me, there's no reason for ego bashing. I think when you make a quantum leap, you go from the either-or mechanism running, you know, either materialist or spiritual, right?
Right.
And you go to the both and. Hmm. And the both meaning it's all of it. It's all of the above that that every aspect of life participates in. And when you start looking from there, you have a genuine appreciation for the immanent and the transcendent. So I like to think of it as, for example, what I call the five faculties of mind. One of the faculties is awareness. And the dynamic of that faculty, or I say it the other way around, is meditation. I consider meditation one of the natural faculties of mind. So, yes, we have the meditation practices, which enables us to master that aspect of ourselves. Yet it's a natural state. So when we make the leap, truly, authentically, from separation consciousness, we realize that we can be in the transcendent state, in a continuous state of awakened awareness, aware of awareness itself, and at the same time, simultaneously, in this both-and world, be fully aware of our imminent role that we play in the mundane world, and be fully engaged in all of what that means. As I say, our quirks are love all of it, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the sublime. And just realize that it is through this imminent role that we live out our soul's evolution, that we have the opportunity to connect and bring, literally bring life to life, bring the divine to life through those roles we play, which I would say is my way of distinguishing ego. So it's a matter of loving your ego as one of the access points and realizing that we're also of that divine nature, so that we can be living in this awakened awareness all the time of everything that means.
Now, Diane, I've got to come back to your book and the work that you're doing, because, you know, so much for us and in my life, what's important is sort of where the rubber meets the road, as it were. And spirit, you're talking about the spiritual and the mundane right now. And, you know, we have a really troubled world that's struggling with a lot of things. And now, you know, you have your work and your book, and you have presented Quantum Think to executives, managers, consultants, and staff in the world's leading companies like AT&T and Chase Bank and CNN, DuPont, and Sprint, and to various offices of the United States government, including the Assistant Secretary of Defense, and entrepreneurs. So this is for all of us, homemakers and professionals, and also for corporations. And that to me is one of the places where the rubber meets the road. So if we could turn to that, I'd love if you could share from Quantum Think, what are your clients hoping for? What do they see? What do they like want to change? What are some of the results?
Well, it's interesting, and this is a good example. I'm really glad you brought this up, Care. It's a good example of where the subtlety of where we may not be living the wisdom. When we make comments about they, right? The
right.
Big them out there. Never us, right? How they are trying to manipulate us, or they are trying to, you know, control everything with the wealth, or they. And, you know, making the corporation the villain. And so when you have a true awakening, you realize that the people, you know, there are entities, obviously, that mm-hmm. we call a corporation, but who comprises, who creates, who maintains these entities are always individuals. So if we really are operating from a unitive consciousness, then we look at one another and you realize what you ask the question, what are they hoping for? Well, they're in the same world that we are. So whether they're looking for in their day-to-day life, and to me this is what quantum thinking and my work is all about, is modernizing this so that literally this becomes a way of life that fits into the culture as it is, the technology, the way it's speeding things up, the complexity, the way it's making our choices. So when we're talking with our clients, they have the same situations that any of us do. They have on a spiritual level, they're wanting and yearning to connect spiritually, to know that they have some purpose and that they're living it through what they do. They want to know on a mundane level in their own company how they can, you know, collaborate and be more harmonious in their relationships with the people that they interface with in business. You know, how to have it work for everyone. They want to know how can they maintain the profitability of their company so that financially things are working. So you get into this both end, you know, they are like all of us as individuals. When I say they, the companies themselves, just like all of our institutions, are still having this, and we know that, you know, they're coming under scrutiny. We're in that transitional stage where what has worked up until now has, you could say, reached the limits of effectiveness in that old world structure. For example, in corporations, they call it stovepipe, where the way that the corporations are structured organizationally, it's like each, you know, vice president or president, they're all thinking in their own division. And they're not looking from the whole of it, I suppose, unless you're at the very top. And even then, you have a little of this separation thinking going on. But, you know, it's either, you know, well, if we win over here, what if they lose over there? And that whole thing. So they realize what they want, to answer your question, is they want to be able to transcend that, quote, stovepipe separation. I'm in my funnel over here and you're in your funnel over there. They want everything that you and I and everyone listening wants. And
still sounds very internal to me, just within the company.
Well, it isn't just within the company.
Right,
I'm just
from my perspective, what one bank officer does is directly connected to the rest of the world and some, you know, child somewhere who's hungry, and that's what I'm hoping this may begin to address.
Well, it definitely does, because when each individual sees, in a certain way, it's almost, I've never said it this way, it's almost like saying, you know, it's okay to think this way, to think for the whole, you know, to think from the whole for the whole, to see the connections, what you just pointed out, Care. It's almost like it hasn't, you know, what's the difference? You know, I'd say my book, it's not really about the book. It's about what I'm doing is bringing into awareness, into light, what I call the art of distinguishing, bringing into your awareness what is already in us so that it can be in the light so that we can work with it. So when they start to see the connection between everything and that you actually can think from infinite possibility, that's the third distinction in the quantum think distinction principles, is that what if, you know, we're so automatically go to the way we did it last time or the way we approached it, or thinking the thought pattern that tells them, oh, we can't do that because it's never been done before. These things are so automatic. But when they become aware of quantum and start quantum thinking, they catch themselves immediately. I call it a least action pathway, the way the energy or the thought goes, because it's been that route before. They catch themselves in the cultural least action pathways. And they say, you know what? Let's just think from infinite possibility. What else is possible here? And I think, Kara, that I know, in fact, that it's a question of this awakening beyond those automatic conditioned habits that are a vestige of our level of evolution from the industrial age worldview. Now, I made that story up. You know, I just distinguished that because it gives us an opportunity to we can still be accountable and responsible, but we don't have to be in blame and shame. We can say, you know what? Let's bring some compassion to ourselves as leaders. And you can see in the world today, as you start talking to some of these leaders, and we have some amazing clients who are thinking this way. And they're thinking, I'm talking about presidents, executive vice presidents of major, you know, names you would know, we can't reveal.
Right.
But where they're starting to think from, how can my industry make a difference in the way the systems and structures can be redesigned to work for everyone? And, you know, one of the clients who we're working with is, you know, wants to make that kind of a difference in media, in the way media presents itself, reports the news. I mean, so that
right.
One individual where, you know, this person has been working on it for a couple of years now, and the quickening, what we're seeing now is many corporations who she has connection with are very much resonating with the messages that we're talking about right now.
Well, Diane, you know, we're about halfway through the program right now, and before I go to a quick break, I just want to say something that's just come to me, which is that looking at the greed in the world and the kind of devastation that has been taking place recently, especially in our culture economically, it could be that that is the tail end of, you know, the industrial age thinking, that where the pendulum has swung so far that if all that matters is matter, this is where we end up.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk more about that. I mean, we're going to bring up Robin Hood when we come back after the break. I'm just going to take a quick break for the moment. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Diane Collins, consultant and author of the new book, Do You Quantum Think? Let's spend a couple of minutes now with a bit of an old favorite. Stay with us.
And when you're far from home,
welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. You are live with CARE, and that was a little bit of the song Love is the Answer, you might recall, from England Dan and John Ford Coley. We are discussing the end of the era of greed, hopefully, and the rise of compassion in our world, and how this happens, how the shift happens on a practical level from the empty lives of materialism toward the inspired lives that are lit up inside by much broader choices, and specifically the choice, which is actually like an election, to choose love and compassion and a new way of thinking in our world. And one of the people who's right hot on this path is on the program with us right now. Her name is Diane Collins. She is a consultant and author of the new book, Do You Quantum Think? And speaks and presents to corporations and business managers and government leaders, as well as anyone interested in learning about the way forward from where we are. Now, Diane, in your book, you say, and I love this quote, Robin Hood, the legendary archer, outlaw, hero of England's Sherwood Forest, who stole from the rich to help the poor, is a good story, yet not necessarily an effective methodology for abundant living. The Beatles saying, money can't buy me love, a straightforward message. Until humankind lifts their consciousness, awakens their soul, ignites their heart field, what can happen in the right direction so all people live in abundance? Beautifully written.
Thank you.
Can we share some of that answer and where your work takes us in that regard?
Well, it's again, for me, it's always an awakening beyond the automatic conditioning that comes from the earlier stage of our evolution, as seeing the mechanistic universe where only matter is real, end quote, and really starting to realize that what is the quantum worldview? Well, it's a mind-based, right? The world, the universe is a giant mind where there are distinctions but no actual separations. So how does this show up in, for example, the observer effect, right?
Right.
Which it's called in science. The observer effect, that we as observers, and in observer means, in this case, what we hold in our awareness. It doesn't mean just what you see. It means what, it's not a perceptual. That's how I use it this way, because perception is of the ordinary five senses. It means what we hold in our awareness, in our consciousness, in mind that way. So in science, it's called the observer effect. It means that we, as observers, always shape what is being observed. There is no separation. We influence it because the creative force is mind. In quantum think, I call this distinction one of the 21 principles of the quantum think system. Observer-created reality, that we live in an observer-created reality. In the spiritual way, the spiritual masters say it this way, the world exists on the screen of your own consciousness. Or as my mentor and friend, Dr. Fred Alan Wolf, who also wrote the foreword, he says it very, there ain't no out there out there. So when you have this level of awareness, where I have used the science, quantum think is not about science. It's about how the discoveries of science have shaped the way we think, and how we can use the new discoveries to consciously, of our own volition, shape the way we think, to make that leap right now. So when we're working with leaders in government, in corporations, anywhere, ordinary, you know, everyday you and me people, and you have this realization, I say it like this, what you bring is what you get, that the assumptions, conclusions, ideas, beliefs that you bring to your observation are going to shape them. But that underlying it all, you know, apart from anything we may think of as divine, but in ordinary human everyday life, there are no absolutes. Reality is not an absolute certainty. It's energy in flux, informed by intelligence. Everything is malleable. So the fact that you have a belief or a thought or a conclusion that you've been living by without, most of the time, without even realizing it.
Right, like it's hardwired.
Yeah, is that it isn't actually hardwired.
Right.
It's software. So when you, and that's a good metaphor.
It's a good analogy, yeah.
Because when you, what is quantum thinking? It's upgrading the operating system for mind. And it's going, and then the new software fits, right? It's like we think nothing of upgrading our computers when the new software will no longer work
right.
in the old operating system.
Right.
So quantum thinking is like that. It's like a new operating system, and you realize this software, you can upgrade it. You don't have to be stuck with those brain connections. Right? You
right.
don't have to be there. That's the one principle. It's called the theory, comes from the theory of uncertainty of Heisenberg, where he said you could never get the velocity and the location of an energy particle at the same time. Why not?
Right.
Because everything is always moving in flux. It's just an ordinary logic.
Right.
So what happens when you apply that to us is you realize no matter how much evidence we have, if we've had 6,000 years where people have, you know, get this idea that is war a way of, you know, is that inevitable?
Is that
no.
a hardwired way of life?
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not.
Right.
And when you start getting people who are waking up to this and you look at this idea of greed, I like what you said before the break, that maybe that's, you know, it's like...
Maybe we've just watched that collapse.
Right. We're watching it collapse. And it's coming into, it's like reached the, you know, the end game stage of it. Now, at the same time, we have to be careful. And this is where going to both end thinking, new worldview thinking, is very important. It's vital because... if we stay with the either or, then we go into this 1%, 99% conversation.
Right, exactly.
And that is not helpful because whenever we're fighting against, and this is where I go back to what I was saying earlier, Cara, about living the wisdom is actually having that profound compassion for people who may be wound up in that software of greed for whatever reason. The analysis is really irrelevant, you know, whether it's, you know, what happened when they were younger or they're on a power trip or they didn't get past the third chakra, you know. Whatever we say about it, when we have compassion for that and we start living from a unitive place, whole systems, holistic and holographic. That's the first principle in quantum thinking. And we think, how can we have this work for everyone? How can we have the kind of conversations with the people who are in charge of the international banking and the monetary systems and the institutional investment banks? How do we start having conversations with them that transcends being against them and literally has them open their heart to see that we can all have an abundant life? And it isn't going to come from, that's where we get back to the Robin Hood that I wrote about, you know, stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. While it may be helpful in certain, you know, that's the whole idea of giving and contributing, and certainly we want to do that. Yet, as it doesn't get to the source of the solution. And the source of the solution for me is, how can we have this being in the question? How do we have it work for everyone? Now, from an old world thinking, we would try to do that, you know, divide it up, you know, maybe, oh, well, let's just divide it up easily, or let's take down the corporations. Well, that's not helpful, because what about all the people that are working there, you know? So this is where
right, it's about transformation, and generally it tends to happen like one heart at a time, as I've seen.
Exactly.
It really is. But, you know, in terms of you mentioning the sciences and such, for example, I've never had that kind of rift between science and spirituality. For me, science has informed my faith. So especially the space sciences and fields like cosmology. So when I learn from the space sciences that when a star dies, it actually gives us the new elements that we need for our life, and that this has been going on, I look at the nature of nature and I say, okay, so something surrenders toward new life. And to me, this is built in to the fabric, whether we, you know, whether that surrender is, you know, the emptying of self, as the Buddhists might say, or another death and resurrection, as, you know, Christians might say. However it's manifested, to me, the spiritual life that you're referring to, that we revere in the masters, like the saints, has to generally do with stepping aside or surrendering something toward new life. And to me, when we're in a lot of pain when we resist that. And sometimes that can be on a corporate level, a national level, the level of an entire religious tradition is struggling to hold on as what you might have called the hardwired thinking. And there's actually pain coming from it. As a loving parent, I look at my child and I can say with compassion, I know why you did that, but you're hurting someone. I need you to stop doing that.
Yes.
Is there a way, I'm just wondering, you know, when my husband and I watch Star Trek The Next Generation, and Captain Picard always refers to this, the old way we used to be, and we're not like that anymore. We're not all about money and matter and greed and substance, and we're about learning and we're about bettering ourselves. We always say, what happened? What was the bridge?
It's a vision, right? It's a vision of the future, which to me is basically
what you're talking about and what you're focusing on in your work and in your book as the bridge. Can you comment on that?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, let me just address what you said, Kerr, about cosmology and the sciences and spirituality. They were never separate.
Right.
But they got separated like everything else. So when this is the type of education that is the leap, so that we start looking and living from the principles. People ask me, what do you mean a quantum leap in consciousness to a new system of thinking?
Right.
Well, when you have all these principles together, you realize, oh, okay, that's good. Then you can start designing the educational system to work that way. So what I call living FD, fully dimensionally, that you're seeing this birth, life, death renewal that you referred to, I'm saying it in different terms,
right,
but that's what you're talking about, that surrendering in a new light, so that we have the understanding of our connection. Because when we're oriented around the physical five senses, we don't even realize our connection with the carbon dioxide that's being given off by plant life. That's keeping us alive, and
right,
the exchange that's going on there, because it's invisible. So we have to start literally taking into account what is invisible to the ordinary five senses and start to living in that reality as if it's real. So one of the important aspects of getting. So I think, you know, this is what it is. It's making that label, saying, oh, these are the principles, right? Now, how do I think from that state rather than trying to get to the more expanded and more accurate worldview from the more limited one? Because you can't, I say it this way, you cannot see a new worldview from the perspective of the old worldview. You have to look from the more expanded way, and then you reflect back and say, okay, if we were designing from these principles, how would we design our educational system? How would we design the way that we talk about spirituality and the rest of it? And so it becomes an integrated way of being. And you brought up Star Trek, one of my favorite shows of all time.
Right?
And you see, now, this is interesting because we, and I have in my book, for example, you don't even realize, but we project, right? We project these visions that become realities. That's a mind-based creative, right? The mind, the creative dynamic. So if we're living what quantum thinking is about, and we want to create and project this new reality, this which starts, right, as thought that creates, it energizes the field, and the field becomes magnetic, and it starts to magnetize that, you know, in the very popular way people say, you know, talk about the law of attraction, and it seems like, you know, it's la-la land, but there is some, there's scientific evidence underneath it.
Right.
But the point is that we hold in place, I call this transformation as distinct from change in DU Quantum Thing. If we think it's going to happen, then we're not living in beyond time, because that's one of the distinctions. When you're living in the transcendent and the imminent, you realize time is a tool that we use, but it's not an absolute. So the transcendent state is beyond the limits of ordinary chronological time and physicality. So when you're looking from there and you're realizing, how do I hold in vibrationally, how do I hold it in vision and in consciousness, the reality that I want? And this is where we can easily get tripped up, because we get tripped up by what we see. You know, I'll believe it when I see it, rather than the other way around.
Right.
So it is incumbent upon us that, here's a quantum occurrence. I just looked at my bookshelf, and I looked right, I have, well, hundreds of books, went right on the word incumbent in the title. Mm-hmm. But it's incumbent upon us to hold that this reality, this expanded and more heartfelt experience of our connection to each other and to all of life and all of creation, that it already is this way, that is what everyone wants, and that when we act as if it already is this way, when we're relating this way with one another, you asked me how, you know, what about the people in corporations and the clients we work with? That's all we do. We just are with each other as if it already is that way. And that's what happens. They have instantaneous shifts in relationships and therefore in their results, because they're the resistance that the competition is good, but the competitiveness that separates, right, like the low side of it, that just vanishes. So the challenge for us is to go beyond the circumstances of what we read on the internet in the daily headlines, to go beyond what we see on TV, to go beyond the opinions in the thoughtosphere, as I like to call it these days, that is surrounding us, the thoughts that are visiting that aren't even ours. We didn't even choose them. They're just hanging out and, you know, in our atmosphere, and be able to still hold our own center, to remain in that zero-point state, that state where we are the most effective in our creative force.
And thank you for that. What stands out to me is when you talk about holding the vision in your mind about, you know, what could be, which already is. I also believe, though, that it takes more than holding a vision. It actually will involve action.
Absolutely.
When you decide, like, for example, to live a different life and leaving New York, getting off the grid, coming to coastal Maine and literally putting, you know, our feet to the ground on what we were believing, it does require physical response. So that's my feedback to that, is that on some level, in order for this world to progress, some things do need to be let go of, and some things do need to be sacrificed for all of us to achieve the kind of abundance that you're referring to. Personally, I don't see any other way around it.
Well, here's the thing. You know, when you said that, it reminded me of something that one of my teachers, Swami Muktananda, who was passed into the other realm, but who was the former head of the Siddha Yoga lineage, and he said, and this is not about you, but he said anyone can go to the mountaintop, right, and be in this high spiritual state, but mastery is about being among the throng of 1,000 and remaining in that state. So the throng of 1,000 is what you're referring to, is where we are in the world. See, living fully dimensionally, yes, it does require the surrendering of some of what's no longer working. So the new can emerge, right? That's
right.
What we were talking about, that birth, life, death, renewal cycle. Absolutely. But it's also being able to be attuned enough to know. And I think also incumbent upon us, and this is where the action comes in, is to know enough, have enough awareness about our individual purpose so that we can use our talents, the experiences that we've been given, and what we're supposed to be doing at this time of this great shift in the world so that we become an integral contributing co-partner in this new life for us.
Thank you, Diane, so much. As we come to the end of the program, I just wanted to let listeners know that your website and contact and book information will be posted on our homepage shortly at GodspeedInstitute.com. I just want to thank you so much again for being on the program and sharing from your work and your life experience.
Thank you so much, Kara. Thank you for all that you do in the world.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us on the Godspeed Institute today. This program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City and produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you'd like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. And join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems right here at 2 p.m. each Sunday at prn.fm. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.